Welcome to today's episode of SaaS Growth Marketers. This podcast is for every marketing leader of a SaaS business who wants to get unfiltered insights that will help them excel in their career. No BS bingo, no feather beds, just leaders speaking up. Leaders admitting where they failed and what they learned, and profiled guests that have the guts to enter the ring with an unconventional host, Frank Buckler. He's a marketer himself, but also an engineer, a programmer, and the inventor of a groundbreaking causal machine learning technology. Foremost, he leads a successful SaaS business himself, SaaSConversion.io. Now, let's welcome today's guest. Frank, the stage is yours. Our guest today is Ed Brault, Chief Marketing Officer at Aprimo. Ed leads a team of marketing strategists and thought leaders who partner with top enterprise brands to navigate complexity, disruption, transformation, and change to the modern marketing organization. During his career, Ed has significantly contributed to the marketing operations business discipline, consulting for more than 100 marketing organizations around the globe, and addressing marketing challenges within all industry verticals.
Hi, Ed. How are you this morning?
Hello, Frank. Doing well. Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us in the podcast. It's going to be an interesting topic, transforming revenue operations. OKR had broken down marketing and sales silos. How did you come up with this suggestion?
Yeah, this is something that I'm living and very deep in right now, and my whole company is, which is what makes this work. It's a method to manage a B2B SaaS company who wants to get to that next level. We like to say, what got you here won't get you there, and scale our growth. And we can only do that if we're doing the right things that are leading towards the outcomes, the goal of our company, which is growth in revenue.
That sounds promising and what many SaaS companies are looking for, right? So let's start in the beginning. What is OKR?
Yeah, there's a lot in there, and it's pretty transformational. It's pretty radical in terms of the culture of the business. So it's more than three letters. OKR stands for objectives and key results. And so objectives represent these lofty, best possible states of aspiration on the dimensions of your company. And that could be something like being the market leader in your space. It could be something like growing into a new geography. It could be something like getting into a new category in the market, or redefine the category in the market, something very lofty and a level one. So there are several layers of this which make it work. So there's level one, which is corporate, level two, which is departmental, and a level three, which is team. That's the objectives. You set these at multiple levels and they cascade, they roll up and they cascade down. And key results are how you measure progress towards those objectives, the outcomes that you're looking for. And the radical nature of it is that you get your organization thinking in terms of the result, not so much the product that's produced. So you move away from activity-based measurement and you look at what's driving the ultimate indicators of success for your objective, like revenue, like market share, etc.
And so when I'm coming from the old world, being educated in the 90s and or 80s, there was this whole school of what doesn't get measured, doesn't get done, being KPI driven. Yeah. So what's different to the whole philosophy of putting up some good KPIs and managing the company with it?
We definitely, in the key results, there's KPIs, key performance indicators. And the key results could be a KPI, but then they're also, we'll call it the ultimate result indicator, the leading indicators and also the diagnostic metrics around the KPI that you're driving toward. And how that works is that when you want to create predictability in the model of your business, so this is all wrapped around your business model, how it's designed, and then what you want to do with it to achieve your objective, you need to have these sensors across the layers of your business to allow it to communicate so that you are making efficiencies at the macro levels, not just the local levels of your business. So you could create these local optimums, which actually create inefficiencies across the entire enterprise of your business. And so the idea of moving from departmental KPIs and or management by objectives to now have key results that are all linked lets you make the right decisions to keep the flow through and or the acceleration, the throughput of your revenue engine, keeping that optimized based on the resources that you have. We like to say this a lot, radical transparency across the business in doing so. And I'm a marketing leader and I can see everything that's going on in my product organization. I can see everything that's going on in my finance organization, sales, as an example. Every department sees every department's key results and they all link and work together. And therefore you have everybody rowing the boat in the same direction always.
Yeah, that's interesting. What I pretty much found interesting in the topic you suggested is a silo topic, right? So that's always a debate since decades, yeah, basically how to align marketing and sales, right? So how did this help you to break down the silos? Can you give examples and tell us what are the mechanisms behind that?
Absolutely. Yeah, this is, I mentioned radical transparency. Oftentimes those silos are the fact that you have departmental level goals, but they're not linked and they're not working together. And so you have these conflicts that exist across the company. And or you have, you're disincentivizing the organization at a level to actually perform on a key result that's ultimately important. And so when you have these objectives, these key results completely linked, you now can see the entirety of your business laterally, vertically. And now, like sales and marketing, a traditional friction point of revenue, you now have that completely working together. And we're making decisions now around what's best for those, that element of our organization, sales, marketing, which is the leading indicator of sales, which is the leading indicator of customer success and service. You have that full revenue function working together. And we now on a daily basis and weekly, and then in operations reviews and quarterly business reviews, look at these metrics and we're making decisions based on what's working, what needs improvement. And it's a conversation that I have with my other leaders at the organization to make changes when we need to. And it's now purely data driven. And what it also does when you have this framework, it shows you where those conflicts exist, these signals that are being sent across the organization, so you can deconflict them, as I mentioned. So a key result in marketing as an example, which would be pipeline quota coverage. In a B2B SaaS marketing world, marketing, one of my ultimate KRs is pipeline quota coverage. I want to, in marketing, leverage my four funnels, arguably five, my inbound funnel, my outbound funnel with ABM, my customer expansion funnel, my alliance channel partner funnel, leverage all of those funnels to create demand, capture that demand, qualify that demand, serve that up to my sales organization so that they can, those sellers can have 3x, 4x, 5x, 6x pipeline quota coverage. And so that metric right there brings sales and marketing together. So if I'm not achieving, if I don't have the resources and or I don't have the volume in market to support that, it's a very transparent conversation when I talk to my sales leader and I say, I'm struggling on the upstream, or one of my funnels is not working right now. We will now have these control points, the ability to bring resources where they're needed whenever, we'll call it, the volume or quality is not there, or there's this backlog or inventory of these demand units piling up. And so we can pull resources from the different areas and we can make it the sales, the customer acquisition cost, as efficient as possible. So if marketing needs resources from sales or sales needs resources from marketing, it's a conversation based on joint objectives there. And ultimately, you know, organizationally, we have KRs around customer acquisition costs, as I mentioned, customer lifetime value, net revenue retention, all of those which are made up of factors of the entire go-to-market engine.
Interesting. Another question around this is basically, I could imagine some colleagues listen and say, you know what, objectives and key results, I do it this way. Yeah, I could imagine it's a whole different game if everyone is doing it, and if it's a joint orchestration. Is this the beauty of OKR, that basically everyone speaks the same language, or would you add something else to the
Yeah, that's exactly it. It's a common language across the organization. Not just is the language common, but then also how we describe what it is that we're out there to achieve. And so we go through our structured reporting processes, dashboarding, and report out every organization's performance to plan on our key results. And so while that's being performed, it is essentially moving all of our combined resources together in the same direction. And then there's no longer that, I'll call it, that cognitive load on the rest of the organization to try to decompose and or, you know, misrepresent and or just not understand terminology from one department to the next. And so it gives a common language of communication to create massive improvements in efficiency and decision making. Because in the world of SaaS, B2B, things move fast. Competition moves fast. We saw the market change. Buyer perceptions of and buyer behaviors have really changed. And we have to move fast. Pivot is a word we've been saying a lot that we've had to do. So when you need to move at the speed of SaaS, you can't take the time to miscommunicate. And then have to seek further understanding. It needs to be very well understood, and you need to see it ahead of anything happening, hence the predictive nature of where we want this to go, a predictive revenue function with leading indicators, diagnostic metrics, achieving your goals. And when that's executing and hitting on all cylinders, it's a very different way to operate. And yeah, it's a much more efficient method too.
Since when have you this system operating, and can you basically measure the impact of it? Do you see tangible results already?
Absolutely. We're seeing, whenever you look at something daily, weekly, and you're taking the snapshots of the data, you're trending that data, you're making decisions on that data, you're capturing why you made a decision and when you made that decision, and you look at this over time, you're able to see your changes in process, your efficiencies really start to take shape. And yeah, we absolutely have seen OKRs really transform what we do and how we do it. Over the last even 3 to 6 months, we're seeing, you know, trend lines move in the right directions. And it gets down to being able to allocate resources, course correct, and have a real bias for action versus sort of letting things go on longer than they need to. And then before you know it, you missed opportunities, and then you lost your ability to control the direction of things. So yeah, this visibility, this dashboarding, this data-driven mindset is not just at the leadership levels of the organization, but every resource down to individual contributors really understand what they're doing and why they're doing it. And it gives them their contextual awareness where they fit in to the revenue function of the business.
Do you have an example where you made a decision based on the system? So, yeah.
Absolutely. Once you get this modeled out, so you have your business model defined and you create the control points in your organization, you have these KPIs, leading indicators, diagnostic metrics mapped out, you're seeing the trend lines move, you're making the decisions, you start to see where your bottlenecks are in all of that, where your inefficiencies are. And one of the bottlenecks that I saw, so if you think about in a manufacturing process, there's inventory that builds up, and inventory is not necessarily good when it sits there. There's holding costs associated with that. Now, bring you into a B2B SaaS marketing world, those could be opportunities. They could be leads, opportunities, that demand unit that moves from target to sales addressable to engaged to aware to active to qualified, that those demand units. Once you start to see inventories pile up, you need to address them. You need to move resources there so you can make process changes. One of the things that we specifically changed was our qualification criteria in the handoff from our SDRs, BDR, business development representatives who are out creating demand, capturing demand to our sellers. We were seeing some inventory build up there in an inefficiency in our handoff process. And it was not giving the best buying experience possible. Not only that, but we weren't moving our revenue opportunities through faster. And so we changed up our qualification criteria. We leveraged a BANT, budget authority need timeline methodology. We calibrated that so that we saw the velocity move through much faster. And therefore, we're building a pipeline much faster. We're servicing that demand, which was created much faster, and just creating much, much better buying experiences along with, you know, the commercial outcomes of growth.
Cool. Let me ask you about these leading indicators. Maybe the background. I had some experiences with KPI system. I actually wrote a book, The End of the KPI Illusion. Any listener here, reach out. I send you a free version. But basically, what I always saw in the old or this ancient system is that if you too much look on KPIs, you basically miss to really work on the reasons for driving KPIs. Typically, you simply compare, for instance, the KPI between regions or between time, and then you do kind of a correlation in your mind and come up with some conclusions, but which is often spurious correlations. So it's really an art to really drive the right conclusion and to know what to do. And so I called in my book it key driver indicators. So it's much more important to know what are the things which are most important to your KPIs to drive, because this is what drives actions, right? So my question is this basically what you describe with leading indicators? So basically things which are closest to things you should do or not do?
Yes. The leading indicator essentially would be something that can help describe future events. So as an example, let's zoom down into a sales funnel or a marketing funnel. We want to move demand units or accounts in our ABM strategy from identifying them to targeting them to making them aware of your brand to qualifying them, bringing them into sales. So if a KPI or primary indicator or result in your making them aware of you is an engaged demand unit, you could look at the total number of marketing accepted leads or the total accounts that move from an aware stage to a marketing qualified account stage. So those are the leading indicators. Those are sort of the what you see which could then turn into your primary metric that you're looking for. And then diagnostics around that could be the fit of that account to your ideal customer profile. And then also up on that, in terms of qualification, your BANT qualification score. So if you have high scores of that, it's probably going to lead to better conversion because it's hitting stronger to your core capabilities, your messaging, your differentiation, your strategic relevance. And then those scores then can, predict and or show why something's performing well or why it's not performing well. So if you have low BANT scores, low volume, if you're putting a low volume in market, you're probably going to see lower outcomes. If you're putting higher volumes in, if you're seeing higher quality scores, it's probably going to lead to higher volume and larger pipeline that you would then have to send off into sales.
Cool, makes sense. Do you need a different software for OKR, or do you just use any kind of dashboard sync system?
You could definitely use a spreadsheet. You could definitely use low tech or no tech, but there are providers out there in the market that specialize on this. Objectives, Key Results, work management solutions that you can help operationalize it depending upon the size of your team. So I definitely leverage, I definitely would look towards tech to help you out, because then it has the purpose-built capabilities of communication and business reviews in there, the ability to track and trend, the ability to integrate into the rest of your Salesforce automation systems, get the whole underpinnings built out. So you're not spending your time with all of the administration work and crunching the data, but you're now spending your time looking at how the data is and then looking at the relationships of the data and making decisions. So I definitely would recommend putting some technology investment that's purpose-built for OKRs and this level of management into your operations.
How would you advise to get started? I could imagine it differs for the size of the ask business, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I've talked to folks who have implemented this with tens of thousands of folks, hundreds of folks, and they've deployed in several weeks and or months. So the change wasn't a long drawn out waterfall approach, so to speak. It was very agile. It was a mindset start. And my personal experience is what we've also seen with other companies who've done this. The first reporting period, your first quarter, and that's the key element too. It's you break it down to shorter cadences of reporting. So you move from annual or just quarterly down to monthly and then weekly, as I mentioned. That's a real change component of it. And then you have the mindset for we're going to learn as we go. And you have sessions where you sit back and what are our objectives? How can we make them really exciting? Like, what does best possible look like? Because if you can't see it, you're never going to get there. So take the time, map out your objectives that you'd have departmentally. And then how do you measure the success of the outcome of that objectives? Those are your KRs. Then you look at that, then you bring them all together, and then you have what are called tie-off sessions to make sure that you deconflict your model. And then from there, you work the level one, level two, level three throughout the organization, so it cascades up and down properly. Then you put it into action, and then you quickly realize, hey, what we thought was a key result was actually not a key result. Why were we even measuring that? It was a waste of time. Or, you know what? We realized there's a core outcome that we're trying to get, and we didn't have a KR for that. So let's get that in there in the next reporting period. So typically, you set a KR objective for a quarter. And then you drive quarterly to achieve that. And before the reporting period ends, you define your KRs for that next quarter, and you go into that next quarter with a new set of KRs. But very likely your objectives stayed the same, because your objectives could last, you're continuously on that mission. They could last several years. And it really helps take your strategic long range plan, demystify it, shorten the cadence of it, and make sure that it's on track to meet the long term. And then you create this continuous learning environment in your organization. And early success is you're going to make folks feel a little bit uncomfortable because you're moving a lot of cheese around, so to speak. But you have to gauge that change and how it's absorbed in your organization so that it's positive and you address some of the challenges. Because everybody wants to change, but nobody wants to feel the pain of it. And so you have to, monitor that. But it's a continuous learning situation that you get into.
If you look in the future, so for these kind of management systems, where would you see this in maybe 5 years? Or what will evolve? Where will this whole system improve? Or where would you love to have it improved?
Yeah, for sure. And this is some of the most innovative tech companies use this methodology, like Google as an example. Has leveraged this, pioneered this in many aspects, and I expect it to evolve. And I really think that the future of this and where it's going to go is that you're going to have the ability, we'll call it the predictability of it, is the earlier you get on board, you create the data sets that you have, you're able to mine that data and almost have it bring in some predictive analytics into what you're doing. And so we'll have predictive analytics helping influence, inform what the key result level should be. So let's say you want to grow your organization at 10%, 20%, 30%, 45%. Well, you'll have that data set now, a rich data set to look at, to build projections on. And then it will inform your growth strategy so that you don't get over your skis and or sell your growth plan short. So I really feel that the technology is going to aid our ability to determine how we can grow. And then bringing in market data, bringing in sales data, bringing in, lookalike models for how to grow will be informed in this. I'm excited where it's going. And obviously the technology, which is, I'll call it emerging, the technology that automates this management discipline, it's in an emerging state. I wouldn't even call it, in a state of, it's managed or even close to its potential.
Justin, as we speak about it, could you imagine that there could be kind of a standard OKR system for B2B SaaS companies?
Absolutely. They're a playbook or a standard or by industry, or size of organization. I think that's absolutely going to be in the future, where you get a playbook for objectives and key results that would apply to your business, your industry, and then it would like seeded data inside your platform to then begin to use immediately. So you don't have to, the wheel has been created and you don't have to recreate it. Absolutely have industry standard, sector standard KRs and objectives to start from. We didn't get to start with that when we did it. We had to formulate
it. As you speak, it would have two advantages. First, the standardization. So you learn from a lot of experience, but then if many companies do it and share anonymously the data over the weeks, then predictive analytics can be used much better, basically, to really predict which indicators predict what and where you really need to work on, because sometimes insights are kind of hidden in there.
Absolutely. I love that. The idea of, we'll call it the network effect of sharing the data across to others. So then you would create the ability to have peer group benchmarks in there. You would be able to see how you perform against somebody in, we'll call it a maturity stage, similar to yours. It could inform what's next for you and how to achieve what that next best possible state of operating is. And I really like that. That's definitely the future of where this is going.
So the next business idea has been born.
There you go.
Wonderful. So which question would you have asked if you would be the podcast host?
Yeah, if I was the podcast host, what question would I ask? I would say, how can we, obviously this idea of predictability and of a revenue engine is massively important, but I'll call it the market modeling. And there's this conversation that's happening right now around the chief marketing officer, the CMO. Should he, she be the chief markets officer and really understanding the market better and informing the organization better than anyone, understanding your ICP fit in the market, your total addressable market, your sales addressable market, then bringing in predictive demand capabilities and what we call dark funnel data. And yeah, I would say in terms of modeling your market, how do you go about modeling your market to create a revenue factory that can fully maximize the market potential that you have? I think that's the $1 billion question, more than a million.
What would be your answer if I would ask you this?
I would say it's getting angry at the data modeling aspects of a business. And that's where I'm at right now. I have my chief markets officer hat on right now these days, more than the marketing, because I'm challenged to inform a company strategies, the company strategy around growth. And if I can tap into as much of that market potential as possible and create a market, do we need to get into adjacent markets, understand that market size, generate demand in that market, and then attract it and then qualify it. That's where I'm at right now. So really understanding the total addressable market and then the theoretical value of it, its value to me or my organization, and then having the ability to do all the right things, sort of the throttling, the knobs and dials of investment, and then informing my campaigns and strategies and tactics and all of that along the revenue engine. That's where I've been spending my time. And the other thing is, not going after all of the market that's hard to get to, and looking at not just what's available, but what is in market right now. I use a lot of predictive dark funnel data to get that. What's in market right now? Because it's the economics of going to find that demand, bringing it in, winning that demand that I am responsible for. So that's a whole nother podcast topic for you.
Yeah. Right, Frank. Next time, maybe January or so.
There you go. That sounds good.
Wonderful. It was a pleasure chatting with you today. It was also very enlightening for me and hopefully also for the audience, I'm pretty sure. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you for having me.
So enjoy.
Thanks, Frank. Bye.
Yeah, bye.
This was another episode of SaaS Growth Marketers. Find upcoming guests at sasconversion.io/podcast. Do you want to be a guest too? Apply there, sasconversion.io/podcast. SaaSConversion.io is an inside service that's already added billions in ARR for growth stage SaaS companies by uncovering hidden conversion barriers. Its proprietary AI has already catapulted T-Mobile from a nearly ruined underdog to a leading mobile carrier. It's paved the way to Sonos IPO and is today a secret weapon of the world's largest software company, Microsoft. How does it work? You find it at sasconversion.io. Thanks for listening. See you at our next episode.